Welcome to Mangfoldsmikrofon, the podcast that explores diversity and inclusion with the perspective of creating competitive advantage. As a proud partner of the SHE Conference, Social Human Equity Conference, this collaboration supports the conference's strong vision of promoting change until all are included. I am Michelle Chinnapin, and here organizations share their experience on how they succeed with diversity and inclusion as part of their strategy across people, brands, and partners. Catherine Ducek is a C-suite business leader, corporate board director, advisor, and community builder. She has held one of Canada's most senior financial service executive roles as CEO across 19 countries and recognized across Canada for her leadership and impact by many organizations. Catherine affirmed her gender in 2019, coming out as Catherine in front of 80,000 colleagues, many employees of the division she was leading. I'm delighted to share a very warm and personal conversation with Katie, yet full of tangible business content, while at the SHE Conference here in Oslo, where she also shared valuable insight on stage. Here we tap into her perspective and knowledge on leadership and human capital, her new exciting position, and how inclusive leadership always starts with actually being inclusive on the top. Please enjoy. Welcome, Katie.
It's great to be here. Thank you. It's an honor.
It's a privilege to have you in this amazing car, in a Polestar.
I know. It's a gorgeous car.
It's a gorgeous car.
I've been dreaming about what electric vehicle I will buy. What a beautiful vehicle.
It is. And we are at the SHE Conference in Norway, and delighted to have you here. I told you I've been stalking you. I was delighted to meet you yesterday at the event, and we have a lot to talk about. I know we're on a time schedule. I know everybody's trying to get a piece of you, so I will be effective. Why are you at the SHE Conference? I mean, what drew you to Norway? And, you know, because Norway is special. And can you tell the listener a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, thank you. So why Norway? Why SHE Conference? I have a deep story. I've always admired or long admired Scandinavian countries for their approach to social sustainability and now planet sustainability. So I've long had an admiration of Norway and Scandinavian countries. Number two, and I've never shared this publicly before, but I was on a life retreat in 1994, and you have to write, or you're asked to write, a letter of intention to yourself, and then you destroy it.
Okay.
Because you can create any dream and any goal anytime, and you can destroy them and you can change them. Yet I believe deep down in my soul that if it's a real deep desire, you can't forget it. No. And what I wrote on that piece of paper in 1994 was to do Nobel Prize-worthy work in the world. And I didn't say get the prize. I just said to do Nobel Prize-worthy work in the world. And that's kind of been in the back of my mind for 30 years.
Yeah.
And last night, we were in the room where the Nobel Peace Prize is handed out. So that clearly drew me. And then the third thing was I was familiar with the SHE Conference because of Helen Banner.
Yeah.
And Helen is this incredible human being who, you know, was the head of communications for the European Union. And she's gone off on her own to help empower women and help encourage humanity to claim both our masculine and our feminine energy. Mm. And for me, which is our essence. And Helen and I were trying to arrange a time to meet. And we were trying to meet in London, England. And she says, well, too bad you couldn't come to Oslo. And I go, well, what's going on in Oslo? And she goes, well, the SHE Conference. And she said, it's the world's largest social sustainability conference. And I thought, oh, my goodness, those are my people.
Yeah.
So that's what drew me here. And then she introduced me to Astrid and asked her and said, Katie, we need to put you on the agenda. And that brings me to you, Michelle.
Brilliant. We spoke briefly yesterday, and I thought I was very engaged in what you said because, you know, the podcast is a lot about diversity and inclusion. It is about how business, I want to demystify it a little bit, in especially in the Nordic. You know, I want to demystify it, not make it so complicated. One of my kind of things that I talk about is that I don't want the industry to make it too complicated so that we're damaging the cause. But then you were talking about, we're talking about D&I in this, you know, and you said, you know, these are three very different areas. The two, you know, can, do you know where I'm going with
yeah,
this?
Yeah, for sure.
Sorry. Sorry.
So for me, EDI, because that's the order I'll speak to it in, has one really simple and critical purpose. And critical in a world where we are trying to restore and rejuvenate our planet, in a world where we, I think, are increasingly understanding that we need to reverse social divide and divisiveness, and a world where we need to reduce economic divide and economic, exclusivity. So for me, the simple call to action out of EDI is about unlocking human potential. Mm. And whether you're a country, a community, or a company, our role as leaders is to harness human potential. And the E is about making sure that human beings have access to equal access to healthcare, to education, to the tools that will allow that human being, that individual, to bring their essence and their potential to the world. Mm. The D, I have my own definition for diversity. I actually don't like the word diversity. Only because it comes from the word to divide and divisiveness. I define diversity as visible and invisible dimensions of human uniqueness, that there are unique aspects to each of us that are either visible or invisible that make us unique or make us special. At the core, we're all human beings and we want to be loved and we want to belong and we want to add value to the world. At the core, that's all of us. So we're all human. Yet there are things about us that make us unique. And that uniqueness for me is what makes each human being beautiful. Mm. So I describe diversity as dimensions of human uniqueness. And then to me, the secret sauce is inclusivity.
Yeah.
To me,
I like that one.
Like it is the secret sauce because it's the other two are what? They're factual. You either have equality or you have diversity. It's about whether you want to unlock the essence and the human potential for a higher purpose and to build a better world. And that all comes back to inclusivity. And the fact of the matter is most of us carry around fears of being judged and rejected. Most of us have had points in our life where we're afraid of telling our boss or even family members about, you know, unique needs that we might have at home or unique things that we're experiencing because we're afraid of being judged and rejected.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we live in that place of fear, there's a natural human tendency to contract. And when we contract in fear, we are actually depriving ourselves and those around us and the world of our essence, of the beautiful aspects of us, the creative and the intellectual ability within each of us. We're depriving the world of that because we're contracting and we're holding back.
Yeah.
So for me, inclusivity, whether you're a company or a community, a government, a country, is all about creating an environment of psychological safety, belonging, and even more so an environment that truly wants to see and understand the whole human being and wants more of your intellectual and creative potential to come to the world. Mm. And I believe at the core of my being that if we truly unlock the essence of each person and unlock human potential and collaborate out of a place of kindness and love, I believe that we can solve any problem humanity faces.
Mm. And it's always, you know, I love hearing these words, and then it's beyond lip service. So, you know, one of the
it has to be on.
But how can you use the example? You know, I was reading about you, and you actually introduced something called inclusion dialogues. You know, because mm-hmm. that's so tangible for me, so practical. Because a lot of companies are saying, yeah, we hear what you're saying, but we don't really know what to do.
Yeah. I will describe inclusion dialogues, but I will also describe a little bit more about kind of who I am.
Thank you.
So the human being sitting with you, you know, I affirmed my gender in June of 2019. And I hate the word transgender because it didn't transition my gender, and I affirmed it. You know, I happen to have a set of unique perspectives or perspectives that have come to me through my life experience. I lived 50 years in a man's world. Mm. I have empathy for how boys and men are raised. I am a woman. I felt very feminine or female for most of my life. I just didn't have words for it. And I clearly have empathy for how women are raised and girls are raised and the social biases and constructs that men and women face. Mm. And in my journey of, you know, understanding myself to literally being suicidal and wanting my life to be over, but ultimately choosing to live, to be around for another 50 years for my children. I have four incredible children. I made a promise to myself that I would face my truth. The other somewhat unique aspect of my journey was I happened to be in a job at the time where I had the privilege and responsibility for leading 25,000 people.
Yeah.
So by the time I came out and wanted to keep my job, I had to figure out a way to come out in front of 80,000 people by way of a video and showing the utmost vulnerability in hopes that these 80,000 people or the 25,000 people I was working with and a leadership team, that they would give me a chance to reprove myself to them.
Yeah.
That they would believe that what I was sharing with them was true, that I was wired, and I am wired female. And
Was that a shock to a lot of people?
Oh, totally. No, nobody knew. My spouse didn't know.
No.
Nobody knew. I'd never told my secret to anybody.
No.
And Michelle, I expected to be judged and rejected and abandoned by the world. I expected to be homeless.
And still you thought it was worth it? That, just to emphasize
Because the other option was to end my life.
Yeah,
it was a life or death decision, really. And so when I came out, and others saw it, I didn't see it. A colleague said, oh, get ready for, you know, get ready to be overwhelmed by love and support. And that's what happened, is I received a level of love and embrace and support that was beyond my wildest dreams. And an outpouring of emails from hundreds and now thousands of people.
That's uplifting to hear as for the human.
Yeah, especially nature. When you hear so much about the LGBT community in the world. But the biggest gift that I got was hundreds and now thousands of people telling me their own stories of fear, rejection, their own hardship stories, whether it's a man from India, individuals from the Asian community, women, men, LGBT community. Like, I've heard so many stories from all walks of life that, again, speak to what I said earlier about inclusivity. The fact that they're holding back every day out of fear of judgment and rejection. The fact that they experience microaggressions every day in their life. The fact that they want to be loved and embraced for their essence, for who they are as a whole human being. And what I saw and learned, what I saw was individuals where the company or society might think that the person's bringing them whole, their whole self to society, when in actual fact, society is only getting a fraction of their human potential because of bias or fear. And, you know, it shifted me. It changed me. And, you know,
in what way?
Overnight, like, I was always an empathic leader and a purpose-oriented leader, or not always, but as long as I could remember. But I became so much more purpose-oriented that, and so much more inclusive. And what I saw so clearly was the climate crisis, the social crisis, the economic crises that we face, and all I could think of was, oh my goodness, if we could just solve problems from a place of kindness and love instead of fear and ego. And if we could only unlock, you know, the full human being, their feminine energy, their masculine energy, their essence, their intellectual capability, their creative capability, and work together, again, out of love and kindness, we could solve any problem humanity has ever faced. And frankly, if you study human history, there are indigenous cultures around this world that figured this out a long, long time ago. It's only now that the Western world is beginning to see and understand that there's another way of being in the world, and that that is key to our future, is key to sustainability. So that's who I am, and that's my story, and that's why I'm so passionate about inclusivity, is I've lived it, and I've had the privilege of so many people opening up to me, and I have this knowingness that there is so much human potential available, and if we could harness it and operate in a more holistic, more harmonious way, we can solve any problem that we face.
You've taken on quite a bit of responsibility, though, being that kind of role model. Did you know that that was what the outcome would be?
Responsibility is a fascinating word, because we think about accountability. You must.
Yeah.
Which is command and control. Responsibility comes from within. It's a calling. It's a feeling of obligation. I know myself well enough. I've had a hard journey where I wouldn't wish my most difficult times on any human being. Yet today I live with a level of faith, hope, joy, and love that I've never felt before. And, you know, so that's what I choose to live into, is my faith and love of humanity. I know what we're capable of when we do things from, you know, from our essence and from, you know, a place of kindness. And I also know myself well enough that I'm a fiercely curious human being. I'm a wisdom seeker. I love working with others. I love building things and solving problems. And, you know, the best place for me to do that is the new job that I'm going into.
I know. But before I allow you to go there, because I want to save that for the last.
Okay.
I do want to talk about those inclusion dialogues that you
Because
I just found that fascinating and something that is easy to implement.
They are. So because so many people confidentially opened up to me, and it grew my heart and it grew my empathy and my sense of compassion and understanding of the human condition. And then Black Lives Matter happened.
Yeah.
And then Indigenous in Canada, Indigenous residential schools happened. All I could think of in the leadership role that I had was not to approach these individual crises in an individual or transactional way, was what's a more holistic way I could approach it that would result in an increased sense of compassion, empathy, and understanding.
Mm.
So what I essentially did was recreated the storytelling that I received through my coming out. And so I started, and again, as you say, everybody can do this. It's a question of how you do it. Is I started a webcast called Inclusion Dialogues, where every 6 weeks, with about 3,000 to 5,000 managers on the webcast, I would interview one person. And the person, the human being, was in a leadership position where they were thought to be perfect,
mm-hmm.
because they were a leader, they looked professional, they sounded professional, and everyone would perceive them to be in a position of power. And I interviewed them on their hardship stories. And question one, number one was always, you know, tell us about your job and, oh my God, you've accomplished so much in your career. And then I would go to, you know, tell me about your childhood experience as a young Indigenous woman,
mm-hmm.
or tell me about your early adulthood experience of your mother taking her life.
Yeah.
And or tell me about your experience as an Asian man living through COVID. And they would open up and they would tell their story as a Black person, as an Indigenous person, you know, as someone who experienced suicide in their life. And these were stories that they never shared with anybody.
Yeah, and suddenly for thousands.
And suddenly this respected leader who appears to have it all together is sharing, you know, some of the most human hardship stories people have ever heard.
Yeah. That's powerful.
And then the third question I would ask them was, what message would you have for other managers or other leaders? And every time the message was the same. Be kind and curious with your employees. Be kind and curious and compassionate with your customers. You don't know their story. Spend time getting to know their story. Not to take on the emotional burden of others, but to create a sense of empathy, compassion, and understanding for different human lived experiences so that you can lead in a more understanding, open, and inclusive way that allows people to feel safe, emotionally and psychologically safe. What was fascinating after a year or two of doing these dialogues, we measured inclusivity in the workforce of 25,000. And it also was during COVID, and it was also following my coming out, which I'm sure had something to do with it. But the inclusivity scores or the psychological safety scores of these 25,000 people were like orders of magnitude higher than the corporate average of the company I was working in. And the company that I was working in is an incredible company.
Yeah.
So there's nothing negative on the company. It was just that this group of 25,000 people felt more safe, felt more compassionate, felt more free to bring their ideas into the workplace. And what was fascinating also is they brought the same level of care and compassion to customers, to communities, and achieved 6 out of 7 years of industry-leading customer loyalty results. So, you know, we talk about, you started in the beginning about demystifying DE&I. Creating a kind, compassion, and an inclusive workplace does drive, does ultimately create, doesn't drive, and enables materially differentiated outcomes for the businesses that you're working in.
That's so inspiring to listen to, because demystifying, making it easier to, I mean, a lot of people think it's so complicated. And when you draw it down to being kind, actually, you know, listening to each other, learning from each other, which draws me to you. You talked about life experience, in our, which we both have. But that's drawn you over to your new venture.
Mm-hmm.
Which you told me a little bit about yesterday, and I was like, I have to have this with me on the podcast because it's interesting.
Yeah, I've taken the last year or so to deeply reflect further on who am I, what's my essence, what inspires me, what gives me energy, you know, what are the unique experiences I have that I can bring to the world. And, you know, I'm at a stage in life where I know myself. I'm at peace with myself. And I have a variety of things that I'm doing. I've been working on a book that I hope to publish in the next year or two. And it's half memoir and it's half life and leadership perspectives on the future, things that we've already talked about.
Have you decided the title of the book?
It's either going to be called Catherine, period, or Take the Long Way Home after the Supertramp song, or whatever a publisher helps me come up with. I've also, I have a company that I've set up and a foundation that I've set up so that if I'm out speaking, I'm able to take donations. 'Cause it, to me, it's not about a job. It's, I want to, whatever I do with the book or speaking, I want to kind of cycle it back into a circular economy where I can facilitate research in the area of leadership of the future and inclusivity. And I want to, you know, be part of encouraging, you know, other businesses and organizations around the world to embrace inclusivity as a differentiator, as an enabler to social, economic, and climate sustainability. In my view, the ultimate enabler to it. And then the big piece, you know, my real day job and passion is this week I was announced as the incoming CEO for a bank called Home Equity Bank in Canada, which for me is a social purpose organization. Home Equity Bank, it's already an amazing organization that is focused on enabling and empowering individuals as we age, and allowing aging individuals to remain in their home, but unlock the savings in your home to improve the quality of your life, whether it's create a pension or pay for healthcare costs or travel costs or other things that you experience as you age. And, you know, the reality of the world that we live in today in the Western world is pensions are smaller, cash savings are smaller, and in some cases, people are retiring with no cash savings and a small pension, yet the one place they do have savings is in their home. And this ability to allow them to stay in their home while unlocking those savings, as I say, in the form of a pension or other financial resources that allow them to live more joyful and productive aging years, you know, to me is a social purpose I can be very passionate about. And the other thing, back to all the other areas of interest that I've spoken to, is going into another leadership role with an incredible team as a CEO creates another environment for me to practice, to learn, to research the kind of leadership that, you know, I believe and I hope is key to building a better world.
You said yesterday we talked about different things. We talked about people's soul. We talked about things like that. But you do have a huge presence. You're snickering. It's true. You do have a huge presence. And I'm delighted that you're using that because not everybody does. You could have done a million other things with your background. I'm so delighted that that's what you're doing. And if you could just leave the listener with a last thing, what should they leave the She Conference with?
What should they leave? Firstly, a reaction to your huge presence. You're not the first person to tell me this. It happens almost every day now in my life.
You should just say thank you.
So thank you. But I don't feel that. You're going to make me cry. I'm a little farm girl from this rural community, you know, in Canada, and I'm a child of post-World War II immigrants. My mother was a child refugee and my father was a Russian prisoner of war. So I still think of myself as this farm girl from rural Canada. However, I do know who I am and I am living into my essence. And I just want a kinder world because everybody deserves it. And I want a world that lives on forever. So my ask recommendation to all the participants at the She Conference and candidly any human being is number one, go on to a journey of mindfulness, whether you call it mindfulness or spirituality. But the more we calm our nervous system and the more we learn to tune into, you know, who we are at the core, and the more we learn how to bring more of our gifts to the world, our creative potential, our intellectual potential, and learn to bring more of our heart to the world, the more at peace you will be and the more society and the world will benefit from who you are. So embrace this idea of meditation, mindfulness, that journey of knowing who you are and embracing who you are, whoever you are and wherever you're from, is kind of my recommendation number one. And the number two is it doesn't matter what your title is. Each and every one of us can impact the lives of others. Each and every one of us can improve our own emotional well-being. And each and every one of us can take small steps to build back, you know, a healthy planet. And it's just small steps. It doesn't, you know, there's a scientist in Canada that inspired me years ago. His name's David Suzuki. And his analogy was this picture of a sand hill and grains of sand pouring onto a sand hill. And the grains of sand are constantly sprinkling and sprinkling. And if you've ever sat on a beach, you know, building that sand hill, sprinkling sand onto the hill, at some point, the sand hill collapses and there's a landslide that occurs. And the question is, which grain of sand is more important in creating the landslide? Every grain of sand is equally important in creating the landslide. And we're all grains of sand, and each action we take is a grain of sand. And the reality is none of us know whether our grain of sand or action today is what creates the landslide or not. But you don't need to know. All you need to know is that if you lead from your heart and you find your truth and your essence and you do little things along the way to build a kinder, more inclusive, and sustainable world, that each of those grains of sand will result in landslides. And, you know, that's an analogy and an image that I think every one of us should take away is find your truth, take care of yourself, and remember that every little action you take is a grain of sand that is part of building this sustainable world that we all want.
Katie, that was the best grand finale we could have. Thank you so much for being on the call today in this car at the SheConference.
This cool car.
Very cool car. So
freaking gorgeous car.
We have to keep that part in it. Thank you so much. It was an absolute delight.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Please share this valuable conversation and experience so we can reach those who have started their own work within diversity, inclusion, and equity. If you're curious, are in the start phase of your own process, or want to explore your existing work in this area, feel free to contact me. It is only by active participating in the conversation that you can contribute to change. It is only by sharing that we can shorten the time that this may take. My name is Michelle Chinnapin, and I wish to leave personal, positive footprints.